You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
Over the last couple of weeks, we've been obsessed with political conventions in the United States of America. We've been obsessed with the NASDAQ and the S&P going to all-time record highs and equity markets doing well generally across the board. But one thing that has not slipped through the net, but certainly hasn't received as much attention as it might have done, is the pronunciations from the US Federal Reserve and also the Jackson Hole Central Bankers meeting, which has obviously been done virtually this year. On the line now to talk about some very profound statements and the potential implications of those statements is Russell Silberston, investment strategist at 91 in London. Now, Russell, I'd watched the euro dollar last night and I thought to myself, why is this? And I suddenly realized I hadn't been paying attention to Jerome Powell. What happened? Because that was a big move in the US dollar in the last 24 hours.
Hi there, Lindsay. No, it was indeed. So yesterday, as you observed, it was the virtual Jackson Hole Symposium, and this is an annual sort of get together for central bankers and policy makers. And I think it's usually termed wonkish. You know, it's very academic. But the chair, Jerome Powell, this year decided to reveal the outcome of a monetary policy strategy review that has been going on since actually the beginning of 2019. Mm-hmm. And he basically revealed the new strategy. And I would say, you know, there's a difference between strategy and how what you actually do to achieve that strategy. But in very sort of plain terms, the aim of their new strategy is to run the economy relatively hot. It's to allow slightly higher inflation, and it's not to obsess about sort of unobservable sort of equilibrium rates of unemployment and so on and so forth. So a bit more discretion, running the economy hot, all things being equal, that's of course going to be something that's more negative for the dollar.
Let me read the first paragraph of the piece that you kindly sent me, and obviously it's very condensed, not the full version, but anyway, here we go. The implication of the US Federal Reserve's moves are enormous, you say. In effect, the central bank of the world's largest economy has become more dovish. The Fed will not raise interest rates if inflation is forecast to breach its target. Instead, it will wait until inflation is modestly above target before hiking rates. The aim is to ensure monetary policy does not choke off the economy and de-anchor inflation expectations. It seems to me that there's two ways of looking at this. So they've either moved the goalposts or they've tweaked it given the current economic and health circumstances. Where do you stand on that?
Yeah, I would say we need to put COVID aside, because this is this review started in 2019, and their real concern was that one, the realized inflation outcome, so actual inflation, was lower than their target. So you know, they were sort of scratching their heads about that. And the sort of second issue was that because of that, they were sort of trying to understand, you know, what have we got to do to actually ensure that we meet our sort of statutory requirements? So, you know, they went about this review. So I think it is profound, absolutely, because, you know, you've got the world's, you know, the central bank of the world's largest economy basically saying that, you know, we're going to be much more flexible about where our inflation target is, and we're going to have give ourselves much more discretion in deciding, you know, how we're going to meet our objectives. Unfortunately for them, you know, they were due to unveil all of this earlier this year, but of course COVID came along. You know, and one of the underlying ideas was that in a crisis, we're far more likely to get to zero interest rates. Of course, that's where we find ourselves. So the big question for me going forward from here, Lindsay, is you know, that you know, there's a why, and you know, they've done this. What they've actually done, it's how do they actually do this in practice, and that's the profound bit for markets.
Yeah, they've been doing things that we've been questioning for years, but they seem to achieve their goals, and they seem to achieve these unnatural moves, or what would have been seen to be unnatural moves, you know, two, 3 decades ago. You make some points about markets as well. You say, after what we've just been speaking about, the tweaking of the policy or the changing of the policy, you say this implies higher realized inflation and therefore lower real yields as nominal yields remain unchanged, but inflation rises, point number one. And then you go on to say, which is more important to me, if other major economies are unable to achieve lower real interest rates, their currencies may outperform, pushing the US dollar lower. Now, that's a trend. I mean, I look at the euro dollar because I'm lazy. I don't look at a whole basket of currencies. But when I look at the euro dollar, I see that going from 106 to 119 this year. And I find that a really, really big move for a really, really big currency cross. So the dollar is on, not on the slide, but it's certainly in a weakening trend, and it tends to go in a trend for quite a long time. And I don't mean a couple of months, I mean a few years.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is one of the issues, you know, if this point about zero interest rates is, you know, if everybody's at zero, then how can you sort of differentiate between currencies? But, you know, if the Fed are able to achieve higher inflation, and the Eurozone can't, and Japan can't, if we're all at zero, then actually when you have adjusted for inflation, interest rates in the US are actually going to be lower than they are in Japan and are in the Eurozone. And so absolutely, you know, we've seen this big powerful rally in the euro this year. As you say, moved from sub 110 to close to 120. I would sort of qualify the euro move, because actually I also think there's been some real sort of positive sort of change out of Europe this year. You know, firstly, I think overall the response to COVID has been better, i.e. the public health outcomes, and secondly, of course, you know, we've had the idea of mutualized debt, which is one of the missing legs of the single you know, of monetary union. So there's, you know, as ever with currencies, there's two sides to the story. But you know, it's dollar weakness, euro strength, and hence you've seen this big powerful rally.
Yes, indeed. Point number three, which is so pertinent. Gold should be well supported in such an environment. It has been well supported for quite a while now, had a bit of a wobble because it got a little bit overheated. But do you see the gold bull market continuing?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the way the team I work in sort of thinks about it is Gold is a function of economic uncertainty, and you know, clearly these are hugely uncertain times. It's a function of those real yields and sort of underlying volatility. So it's a good time for gold. We still think it's cheap, and again, you know, back to those real yields, gold. Physical gold has no yield, but actually, you know, in a world where real yields are actually negative, gold's a high yielder. So, you know, no surprise at all that it's been doing well in this environment.
Yes, and I must say, compliments to you and your team. And from different divisions at 91, you've been bullish of gold for a number of years now, and it really has paid off. Point number four, a long period of zero official interest rates will see investors' search for yield continue for years, a potential positive for high yield debt and emerging market assets. Now, I'm hosting a chat about emerging market debt next week, so this is particularly interesting to me. Emerging market currencies and emerging market debt, etc., start to come to the fore now. So again, a very interesting spin-off from the Fed's pronouncements.
No, I think that's right. You know, if you think of the whole sort of monetary system, which is something we've discussed in the past, you know, the dollar is the anchor currency for that. So you get this global effect. You know, if the dollar's falling, it essentially loosens financial conditions for the whole world. And so if the yields on that sort of bedrock of the whole financial system are zero or negative in real terms, savers will look elsewhere. And so, you know, we would expect to see continued, one, saving in this environment, and two, people sort of searching for some sort of yield. And as I say, if the Fed really are anchoring rates at zero for several years, then that's absolutely going to be the outcome.
Final point that you make says the following. Since equity investors can discount future company earnings using medium-term interest rates that are pinned to the floor for several years, we think the move, the Fed move, is positive for equity markets. Now, equity markets have been positive since March 2009, I think it is now, after, of course, a very brief bear market earlier this year. So we just carry on as normal. Is that what you're saying?
I think so. I mean, you know, it's supportive for an overall economy, it's reflationary, and you know, I think the way we tend to think of equities in the broadest sense, you know, is that they're an asset class that's correlated to economic growth. this is all about ensuring economic growth is robust enough to actually raise inflation. In that sort of environment, it should be very, very good for equities.
Final question. Do you think we'll ever see interest rates rising and inflation rising again within our investment or broadcasting lives, Russell? Because it just seems to me that it's not going to happen. Everything's under control. It's Goldilocks stuff.
Yeah, it is, but I'm a little bit more, I don't want to use the word cynical, but I think, you know, the time that inflation central bankers begin to get, you know, accept actually that one, they can't control inflation, and two, therefore we don't really need to worry, is the time I think I get concerned. I mean, we've been thinking a lot about this recently, and you know, the famous sort of, you know, money times velocity, you know, basically ends up at sort of higher prices. You know, it is true, but when you look at that study, you know, it was over rolling 30-year periods. I can definitely see an environment whereby, you know, if central banks are printing, if growth does pick up post-COVID, which it will, and if we have sort of governments that are spending widely and aren't sort of pushing back on that in terms of austerity, and in some economies you get a bit of a demographic tailwind, like the US, for example, I can definitely see an environment where we do see in inflation picking up. It won't be globally, but you know, there's definitely some scope, I think, in the US. So, you know, I think, you know, I certainly wouldn't rule it out.
Russell, great stuff, great analysis. Thanks so much for your time. That's Russell Silberstone, investment strategist at 91 in London. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.